5 p.m. A severe thunderstorm watch remains in effect for the entire WILL severe weather coverage area until 6 p.m.
All Things Considered is made possible in part by a grant from the Brown Bag Deli Restaurant, Homemade Pies by Inge, Gourmet Foods, Cards and Gifts, as well as Creative Crafts, Zimmer Art Gallery, Wacky Nackies, The Bean Scene Cafe, and Prairie Fire Glass, all housed in the same buildings in downtown Monticello.
This week in This American Life.
What would be wrong with one channel that showed nothing but puppies, acting the natural comedians and cuties that they are all day, every day?
After 25 years as a businessman, one man starts from scratch to create a cable network with this theme song.
Puppies, 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 puppies.
The cutest, fuzziest radio story on earth this week.
Tonight at 6 here on WILL Urbana. A severe thunderstorm watch is in effect for the entire WILL severe weather coverage area until 6 o'clock this evening. It's 5 p.m. Central Time. Keeping the Faith with Steve Shoemaker is next.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Welcome to Keeping the Faith. This afternoon we're talking by phone with Jean Murray Walker about poetry. Jean, can you hear me all right?
I sure can.
And what state are you in? Are you in Delaware? Where is your office?
No, I'm at home at the moment, which is on the main line of Philadelphia.
Okay, but you teach at the University of Delaware. You're a professor of English there.
That's true.
So how far is that commute?
It's really only 45 minutes. Delaware is such a small state that you can be in and out of it in about an hour and a half. So it doesn't take me very long to get down there.
And since no state troopers are listening, do you ever write poems on your way to work?
Indeed, I do. I don't actually write poems, Steve. I just take notes.
And do you do that with a tape recorder? Do you do that with pen and ink, computer? How do you usually write your poetry?
Well, when I'm composing a poem, I often do it with pen and ink, but I can also do it on the computer now. Mm-hmm. That's something I've learned how to do over the years. I've been using a computer for 21 years. So at the beginning, I have to confess, it was very difficult to do that, and I have taught myself how to do it. I think one of the temptations for me, when I'm writing on a computer, is to write at greater lengths to make the poems longer than they should be. So I often overwrite and then go back and cut a lot.
Hmm. Let me say a few more words of introduction about our guest. A recent book of hers was published by University of Illinois Press. It's titled A Deed to the Light, a collection of her recent poetry that came out just this year, 2004. And let me encourage listeners who would like to ask a question about poetry, writing poetry, or particular poems in Jean Murray Walker's books. There are a couple of phone numbers you can use to call into this live program. Anywhere the program is heard, you may call 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. In Champaign-Urbana, where the program originates, you may use 333-9455 to access several local lines. Jean, tell us about how A Deed to the Light came to be. When did you first start writing these particular poems?
Well, these poems are collected from the last maybe 8 years. Mm-hmm. Some of them are slightly older than that. I think I do what most poets do, and that is I try to assemble a collection of poems that I've written since the last collection, and the last collection came out in 1998. It's now out of print, but the poems in each one of my volumes are fairly different from one another. So these poems, I did some revising last year before I finally put the collection together.
Now, several of these have religious themes, which make them of particular interest to listeners to this program, Keeping the Faith. Some have been published in places like the Christian Century, the Notre Dame Review, Is it image or image?
Image.
Spirituality and health. But you've also been published, some of these in Prairie Schooner, Poetry, Gettysburg Review, many other places. I guess the first question I have about the poetry with religious content and images is, does that come natural to you? Is that something you have long done, or is that something fairly new?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I think the whole problem of language for somebody who's a believer is difficult, because it seems to me that there's a whole world of biblical language, first of all, which I was a reader of the King James Bible when I was younger and still am. And that kind of language, of course, is not appropriate. And then there's the language of dogma, or the language of argument about our faith, or expression of faith. And I think for me, the problem with that language for many years was that it's fairly cliched. And it's taken me a long time to try to figure out how to write about the experience of somebody who's on a religious journey in ways that are not, how to say it new, how to make it new again. And I think that one of the problems is that it's not exactly, the language isn't really recognizable to people who are in the religious community. The experience is, because what I'm often talking about or wrestling with are questions of forgiveness, are questions of faith and doubt, those kinds of questions, but it's not necessarily in religious language.
And I'm not sure how much of this we can quote, since I didn't get permission from Poetry Magazine to quote from your most recent poem there called Staying Power, but I think I can at least safely quote the at the beginning. It says, in appreciation of Maxim Gorky at the International Convention of Atheists, 1929. Now, and yet in that poem, you're dealing with the whole issue of not only doubt, but God. I wonder how many times Poetry Magazine has had a poem in it that uses the word God. I think six times I counted.
Well, that's something. I don't know the answer to that question, but I think at the moment Poetry Magazine is amazingly about discovering those issues and wrestling with those questions, and I think there's a new editor, as you probably know. Mm-hmm. I think he took over in October of 2003, and the magazine is about struggling with all kinds of important questions. I have the feeling that the great literature has always been about questions of doubt and belief and faith, and think about Moby Dick, think about a lot of Shakespeare's plays, think about the greatest literature, Dostoevsky, for example. I'm sort of not as surprised to see that in Poetry Magazine, because I think that the magazine right now is really about wrestling with things that are crucial. And, you know, that leads me to say poetry is not ornamental. It's really about struggle. At some level. So I don't know whether there are lots of poems that come out and say God in the way that poem does, but I think there are a lot of poems that deal with those questions. Mm-hmm.
Could we ask you to read a poem of yours that you have copyright to and wouldn't mind sharing with a listening audience?
Yeah, I would love to. There's a poem in A Deed to the Light, which is called The Nurses. Let me just take a minute to say something about it before I start reading it. I have a friend who is now retired from nursing, but who has been a crucial figure in the setting up a lot of what goes on with children's cancer wards. She actually started in Boston probably 35 or 40 years ago, and one of her innovations was to allow parents to stay with children overnight. And one of the things that she told me was that you have to laugh, otherwise you can't go back. So the nurses is a kind of view of Jean Ferguson and her friends from the point of view of somebody who's visiting a sick child. The nurses. I can hear them in there laughing, the nurses on the children's cancer ward, as I walk through, my heart snagged on a child in room 206, the boat of my hopes tipping its freight into the water. Because kids in here are dying, like trees turning in the fall, so slowly that we have to dwell on each interval of suffering. The door opens a slice, and I see nurses leaning into laughter, collapsing, gripping each other's arms. Their laughter skates on air. It fills the room up. It towers above us. I shut the door. They laugh because grief adheres to them as desire adheres to beautiful women. They have to pick it from their fur. They have to help each other comb it out. They study jokes as farm girls study dresses in a catalog. They balance on a high beam of laughter, knowing if they laugh, they might come back tomorrow.
We've just heard Jean Murray Walker, the author, read her poem, The Nurses, which is this particular poem dedicated to for Jean Ferguson from her most recent book, A Deed to the Light, published by University of Illinois Press. Thank you for reading that, Jean. Let's talk a little bit about that. In this case, here's a person you know. You're, I take it, reflecting on a visit to her where you observed this. Do most of your poems come from an incident in reality?
Some of them do. If they don't, it's probably necessary. A lot of the time it's necessary to go back and fictionalize that and make it up,
mm-hmm.
Which isn't really lying, I think, because what you try to catch is something that's universal, and it needs to be specific enough so that readers can connect with it. But a lot of things do come from daily events. Kind of trying to see below the surface.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller waiting to join the conversation. Let's go to line one in Champaign-Urbana. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please. Yes, line one.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can now.
Yes. Okay. I have one comment. I love the poems that were just written about the nurses. And my question is, do you think that I'm very interested in the hospice movement. Do you think that has helped a lot with children? I know I've taken care of dying patients, young and old, so I'll hang up and listen to the author's opinion about that. The question is about, has the hospice movement helped children? Thank you.
Do you have any experience, Jean, with the hospice movement?
I don't accept through my friend Jean and various other parents that I've known, but I have the sense that that it has, without knowing a whole lot about it. I think whatever connects families, children. We've had a child with a seizure disorder, which fortunately he grew out of.
Mm-hmm.
But we've spent some time in the hospital, and it's pretty rough to be in the hospital. And whatever brings children connected to be connected with their parents and the rest of their family seems to me that it would be healing.
You have children of your own then?
We have two.
Mm-hmm. We had a child with a seizure disorder as well, and there's nothing more frightening than seeing a thing that happened and not knowing how to respond.
Well, exactly. I think particularly if you haven't seen it before,
mm-hmm.
and you don't know exactly what's going on, it's absolutely terrifying.
When you're reading your own poetry, do you, since you're a professor of English, you obviously read other people's poetry as well, do you try to read your own like you read others, or are there differences?
No, I try to read all poetry as if it's alive and as if the audience is interested in hearing inflections. I think there are a number of different ways of reading poetry, and I really hate the way of reading poetry, which I think was probably fairly common in the modern period when there was a kind of, you know, all the lines were read in the same way.
Hmm.
I've spent a fair amount of time with actors because I write for the theater a little bit as well, and they are wonderful in their ability to inflect, and that's what I hope to be doing with all poetry.
We've asked you to read some poetry during this hour. How did you select what you would be reading for this particular program?
Well, I wanted to read things that were short enough so that people could really focus on them. And I wanted to read things that I thought would not be so much about me as about some other subject.
Mm-hmm. How do the students who are in your classes at the University of Delaware respond to poetry? Do you notice any changes in the students now from, say, 10, 15, 20 years ago?
Gee, what an interesting question. I think students may be more hungry and needy in some ways and more overt about it now than they were. At least students at my institution are pretty interested in poetry. I teach a general course occasionally, Introduction to Poetry, and I am thinking particularly of the year 2001 when I had a class at 2 o'clock in the afternoon after it was on 9/11, after we had all heard about the disaster and had a couple of hours to reflect on it. I sent out an email telling students that they did not need to go to class in the afternoon because so many of our students had parents or neighbors in New York, and some of them were actually either supposed to be at the World Trade Center or else they were there.
Yes.
And almost all the students came to class. And it was remarkable to me that that was the case, but I think they needed something. What we tended to do, most of what we did that day was to talk, but we did read some poetry aloud in class. And I think that poetry has become a vehicle for some people now who haven't got very much religious experience, who don't read the Bible, who have very little experience with reflection or meditation. Maybe it's become a way of slowing down and meditating a little bit.
Now, one of the poems in A Deed to the Light is After Terrorism. When did you write that?
I wrote that not very long after 9/11, and I wrote it for my students, and it was really specifically for the students in that class.
Is that one you might read for us this hour?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
For listeners who are following along, they could find this on page 53 of A Deed to the Light, if you have purchased this book.
The poem is called After Terrorism. Here is the path, I'd like to say, darker than it was, maybe, but here we are. Turn left at the light. What light is left? I am thinking about Romulus Augustus, the 2-year-old, last emperor of Rome. How one morning before barbarians broke through the wall and slashed his throat, his guardian stood on his portico, looking out, and said, "So that was Rome," which had been falling for 100 years, slowly as an encroaching stain through fabric, as the invasion of ginkgo forests across Eastern Europe, though no one had noticed. Maybe the John Deere of history has to drag catastrophe into our library with an 18-gauge chain before we finally stand up and say, "Well, what have we got here?" It is the divide I'm talking about, the crack you finally notice in the champagne glass. Though truthfully, what strikes you first is that you won't be finishing the champagne you love. We're divided. The towers have fallen, and terrorists may be secreted like candied fruit through the whole loaf. At the skating rink, at the post office, in supercuts, a chartreuse-haired barber wielding his scissors. I want us to get out of this together, the way a family might cross a meadow under storm-laden clouds, the skinny girl cartwheeling, the father pushing his mother's wheelchair, the young married couple holding hands. Listen, outside this frame, I can see light, heavy as pardon, reliable as granite. Help me drag it into the picture.
We've just heard the poem After Terrorism, read by its author, Jean Murray Walker, from the collection A Deed to the Light. This particular poem was published originally in the journal Image. Jean, could you tell us something about that journal? That is a religious journal that does deal with poetry as well as with other works of art.
Yes, Image is a journal which does, it's a four-color journal, which is kind of unusual. It does wonderful reprints of photographs and artwork. And it's really about, it's a journal of art and spirituality. So it's about the faith journey and about art. It also includes essays. So it is fairly wide-ranging. It has some fiction in it, quite a lot of poetry in it, and it is a wonderful journal to sit down with and just spend a couple of hours, maybe a week or a month or whatever. It comes out 4 or 5 times a year, to spend some time reflecting with fiction, and it's all stuff that's just been written. So it's a good way of keeping track of the writers who are writing about the spiritual life right now.
Jean, I'm going to have to interrupt for just a moment. We need to go to some information about local weather.
A severe thunderstorm warning is in effect for Coles County in East Central Illinois until 5:45 p.m. A severe thunderstorm watch is in effect for the entire WILL severe weather coverage area until 6 o'clock this evening.
And, Jean, we're back live now. Can you hear me all right?
Yep, I'm fine here.
I'm glad the thunderstorms didn't knock out our communication.
Well, I'm very glad, too.
How do you decide where to send your poetry after you've written a series of poems? How do you know who might take it?
The editors of journals are in some ways like writers themselves, who they have an agenda. It's not surprising because they have a readership and they want to give their readers what their readers are looking for, and readers come to expect a certain thing from certain journals. So by knowing the journals, you can find out what the editor is interested in. And you don't do that. Well, that hopefully doesn't affect the way you write, but it does affect where I send things. Mm-hmm. So no editor has an infinite, kind of variety of taste.
So to be a published poet, you have to also be a bit of a reader and a researcher.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think reading is a sine qua non. Absolutely the sine qua non. I think that maybe reading and writing are two sides of the same coin, that if you don't read a lot and maybe not even voluminously, but very carefully, it's pretty hard to write.
And when you were growing up and first developing an interest in literature, and particularly poetry, who were you reading then and who are you reading now?
Well, like many other people before me, I love George Herbert and John Donne, and I was fortunate enough to have teachers who knew those poets very well. They're 17th century poets who are just terrific, and I did a lot of reading of that old stuff when I was younger, and I still do. I've just gotten out Herbert's collected works, and I've been looking at it again. I love Emily Dickinson, and I have for a long time. I love Shakespeare. In fact, when I was an undergraduate, I didn't believe that Shakespeare was as great as people said he was. And I refused to take a Shakespeare course because I thought, this just can't be that everybody worships Shakespeare. When I went on to do my PhD, they made me take a course in Shakespeare. And, of course, I began to love Shakespeare the way everybody else does.
Where did you get your PhD?
I did my PhD work at the University of Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
And I think a lot of Shakespeare's greatest poetry is in his plays, but the sonnets aren't bad either. And I have been infatuated with Wallace Stevens. I went through a very long period of reading Stevens over and over. Elizabeth Bishop is a wonderful poet. I love W.B. Yeats. Nancy Willard is a contemporary poet, almost contemporary of mine, who's just endlessly revealing. She's just a wonderful poet. And Denise Levertov is a poet that I loved. Really, there are just so many wonderful poets.
When your students ask you who they should read, where do you start them these days?
Well, if students are interested in either reading or writing, I tend to give them an anthology and say, do this for fun. Mm-hmm. Just pick up the anthology when you want to read some poems and start anywhere. And if you don't like what you read, go somewhere else and find something you love. And of course, the anthology has, maybe 15 poems by each of 50 poets. And so the kids will generally find a number of poets that they love, and they can then buy collections of those poets. Poetry, it seems to me, should be something you love, and so the best place to start with kids, it seems to me, or anybody really who wants to start reading it, is with something they really love. And you kind of track down, then you go on and you read the collected works of that poet, or maybe one of his volumes or her volumes, and then that poet leads you to somebody else. By then, you're kind of on to a new line, and that's a great way to just kind of educate yourself about poetry.
I want to ask you what you think of a current controversial anthology of poetry, Garrison Keillor's one called Good Poems, but I'll leave that as a teaser for the second half of the program. Let me just remind listeners, this is Keeping the Faith on AM 580 WILL. Public radio service of the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. Listeners to this program who'd like to make a comment or ask a question to our guest today, Jean Murray Walker, may call us. Toll-free line is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL, the call letters for the station. In Champaign-Urbana, you may punch in 333-9455 for several local lines. Let me take just a moment to allow our guests to get a drink of water or clear a throat, and let me tell you who some of the guests coming up on this program will be in the weeks ahead. Next week we'll be having an archive program of that was originally broadcast March 21st of Miley Palmer reflecting on the recent book The Da Vinci Code and talking about several of the historical problems with that book. That'll be July 18. This is a program we're repeating because of popular interest and request. On July 25, David Eisman will be our guest, talking about a Christian view of U.S. prison policy. And then later in August, we'll be hearing from Joel and Barry Schweitzer about Jewish education, Father Paul Pluth on Mary in church life, Cindy Shepherd on the preacher as minor poet. Should be interesting for those of you who are enjoying this program today. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program. I'm the executive director of the University YMCA at the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana. The Y is the oldest religious organization on this campus. It was started by students in 1873. And for the last 131 years now, the Y has been providing opportunities for social action and community service for university students. I might say a word about one of the Y programs where we recycle a lot of things that ordinarily get thrown away by students when they leave campus in the spring. We try to collect those things, save them over the summer, add to them by what gifts local people donate to the Y, and then have a huge sale in the fall when students come back and are trying to furnish apartments and dorm rooms. That sale, incidentally, will be at the University Stock Pavilion this year. It's outgrown the huge Y building. We needed an even bigger place. So August 26, 27, and 28 will be the dump and run sale, where people can buy all kinds of books and furniture and computer things and sound systems and TVs and who knows what all, kitchen wares, very cheaply. We will be collecting a few more things locally during the week of August 2 through 7. That'll be the next time we'll be collecting things at the Y at Chalmers and Wright Street. If you have questions, please call me 337-1500 during the work week. Well, let's get back to our guest. We're talking with Jean Murray Walker, who is a poet. How many books have you had published now, Jean?
This is my sixth book of poetry.
Sixth book of poetry. You have other books?
I have a couple of plays published.
Plays as well. Her most recent book is A Deed to the Light, published by University of Illinois Press, part of the Illinois Poetry Series, edited by Lawrence Lieberman. And this is a book out just in 2004 and is available through University of Illinois Press and at many, many bookstores. Jean, could we ask you to read another poem, either from that book or something else?
Sure, absolutely. I was thinking that I would read poems by other people as well.
Oh, please.
Yeah, there's a poem by Robert Hayden that I in some ways can't get over. I think it's a wonderful poem. It's called Those Winter Sundays. Sundays, too, my father got up early and put his clothes on in the blue-black cold. Then with cracked hands that ached from labor in the weekday weather, made banked fires blaze. No one ever thanked him. I'd wake and hear the cold splintering, breaking. When the rooms were warm, he'd call, and slowly I would rise and dress, fearing the chronic angers of that house, speaking indifferently to him, who had driven out the cold and polished my good shoes as well. What did I know? What did I know of love's austere and lonely offices?
Poem by Robert Hayden, read by Jean Murray Walker. How is Hayden spelled, Jean?
It's H-E-Y-D-E-N.
And is his poetry published in anthologies?
Well, this happens to be in an anthology, which is a really wonderful anthology called Contemporary American Poetry, by Stuart Friebert and David Young.
Published by?
Longman.
Okay.
I believe it's soon to be published by another press, but in any case, I believe it's still available from Longman.
Contemporary American Poetry. And I, as a teaser, before I took a slight break, ask you what you thought of Garrison Keillor's anthology, Good Poems. It's been quite controversial. Some people have attacked it and have attacked Keillor's choice of poems that he reads daily on the Writer's Almanac that is on this public radio station and many others. What do you think of Keillor's selections for anthology and radio reading?
It's true. That's a question that is, you know, it's a vexed question. My own feeling about poetry is that everybody ought to have some, and not everybody needs the same kind. And there are huge numbers of varieties of different kinds of poems, some of which are extremely difficult and obscure. Others are fairly available. And so I'm not one to attack Garrison Keillor's selection. I think instead I'm really pretty grateful. I'm especially grateful for his radio show, which reads a poem a day.
Has he ever selected one of yours to be read?
No, he hasn't, and that's my only axe that I have to grind.
And do you send them to him saying, please read one of mine?
No, I don't even know whether he would get the mail.
Uh-huh,
you know,
sure.
I'm not sure. But he does select people I love, mm-hmm. and whose work I think is absolutely fabulous sometimes. And he selects other people whose work I don't care as much for, but I think if I were making a selection, I probably would be open to the same charge, you mm-hmm. know. Garrison Keillor probably wouldn't always agree with my poems either, or the ones that I selected. So I think here's what's interesting to me about that daily radio show he's got. It reminds me a little bit of, it's a secular version of devotions or quiet time. It's a chance during the day for people who are, most of us, very busy, mm-hmm. who work more than 40 hours a week, as most of us do, and listen to incessant news and get 100 emails a day. It's a chance for us to set apart some minutes to reflect. And I think it's just a fabulous idea to be able to do that. And I know we have a lot of friends who, here, before that, before this radio show, didn't read poetry much.
Hmm.
It's kind of difficult sometimes to read poetry, and they listen to these poems, and I think listening to those poems will lead them to other ones. And so I'm all for it.
We have another caller waiting on line one. Let's go to that. You're on the air with Jean Murray Walker. Go ahead, please.
Yes, please. I have a comment and also a question. I'm an RN, and I love the same poet you do, and I also wondered if you thought terrorism or 9/11 has made a difference in the life of our country, and I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
Could you repeat the question, Steve?
She was asking whether the 9/11 attack has made a difference to poetry in the United States.
Well, that's a very interesting question. I think that the combination of that event and the terror that it brought to many people made some people understand that they needed to have some kind of some way of thinking about spiritual questions or questions of belief or questions of, you know, what's real, what matters, instead of just chasing, I mean, sort of going to the mall. America's a wonderful country, let's all go to the mall. And I think that it brought that to a halt for a little while. I'm not sure that's still true, but the poet laureate at the time, Billy Collins, was able to kind of move that interest in poetry in the direction of something more perhaps long-lasting. I think the clarity of his work and the clarity of more contemporary work, I think a lot of contemporary work is really clearer and more available in some ways than work has been during the modern period. Probably contemporary poetry is clearer in that way, more available. And I think that may have changed things a little bit. I think there are more poetry readings and more people are reading poetry. But, you know, it's also because of shows like Garrison Keillor's and his anthology. So it's a little hard to talk about historical influences. But yes, I have the sense that's probably true.
And we have another caller. Let's go again to line one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Yes, go ahead. Line one, are you there? Oops, we lost that person. Maybe they'll call back. We'll try again. We seem to have a problem with the call-in board. Ah, there, now it's cleared up. So if others would like to call, please do. 333-9455 in Champaign. Elsewhere, 1-800-222-9455. For listeners within the continental U.S., including on the Internet. So this program is available for those of you with that kind of computer access at www.will.uiuc.edu and then go to AM 580 to hear this program elsewhere. Jean, could you read us another one of your poems?
Sure. Do you have a favorite?
Oh, I have several marked, but I'm happy to have your choice.
Well, let me read. This is a pretty universal experience. It happens to be my experience, but this is to my son, off to college, which is on page 36. We stand there in our vestibule, me clutching my car keys, you, your suitcase. Me about to recite the names of apples, Winesap, Braeburn, and so forth, the way poets recite them. Then to chant the names of poets, too, anything you'll listen to. Stanzas of lightning from red mouths. It isn't loveliness I'm after, I can tell you. It's any damn thing that keeps your hand from pushing that door open. Though you're long gone already. And I know it's wrong when the heart has stopped to pretend it hasn't, like a taxidermist. No, we're mixed up with time, my love, and poetry, as usual, fails to stop you. You have to go away, and you may not be back. I eat one of the apples in your memory, like a pioneer who's down to eating seed corn, the sweet sour juices running into a future without you. Well, a voice tells me, I don't own you, and you are a gift, and my barbaric, unteachable mother heart doesn't get it, thinks, okay, fine, so you're gone now. You're that much closer to coming back.
A poem by Jean Murray Walker entitled To My Son Off to College, read by the author from her recent collection, A Deed to the Light. To which I respond, to choose a title first is such an act of pride as if one knows just where a thought will go. Is saying goodbye to our son a better choice than letting go? And when is specificity superior to breadth? Do only parents know the fear of being left behind when children leave? Is every parting death a tiny grave? A title should invite, entice, alert the reader to the text. But what comes next? That's the question. Eyes will open wide to see new truth. Will truth lead to the good? We hug and hope and wave goodbye. The path twists back and then away. A brand new birth? A poem by Steve Shoemaker, read by the author.
It's wonderful.
which I couldn't help but think of somehow when you read that one of yours.
Yeah.
Now, when I was reading along with you with your poem to my son off to college, and you came to your list of apples, Winesap, Braeburn, then you have ETC. I wouldn't have known whether to read that as you did, and so forth, or not.
Oh, you know what? I've never read this poem aloud before. So you probably are right. You know, it should be et cetera. But I mean, I'll have to work that out. I haven't done a lot of readings from this book yet.
Uh-huh.
They start in the fall.
Where will you be reading?
Well, in California, in Illinois, in Boston.
Where in Illinois will you be since this?
Vancouver, at Edwardsville.
Oh, University of Illinois at Edwardsville?
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I think that's actually in the spring rather than the fall. But, you know, I'll be reading around. It's kind of a book tour.
Wonderful. And we got you first. Great.
You did. So I don't know how to read the poem.
Well, it sounded fine. Tell, for people who can't see your work in front of them as they hear it, tell us how you decide. Tell us a little bit about the form. I know that's awfully difficult to talk about, but what can you say about the form of your poems?
Well, the most important thing probably is to say that I started out writing very formal verse. I wrote sestinas and villanelles and sonnets, and always I wrote in iambics. And I still do write in iambics. Mm. I think it's fairly important to have an iambic base.
And tell people what that is.
An iambic is a foot that is comprised of one unstressed syllable and one stressed syllable. So if you say the word today, that's an iambic foot. And five iambic feet would be today, 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 today. So if you want to know what an iambic pentameter line is, you just say today five times, and you've got it. So I don't always write in pentameter, but I do always write with a fairly strong iambic beat beneath whatever may be more conversational.
Almost like walking.
Yeah, absolutely. I really believe that we're close to that, to rhythm. I notice it when I go to the ocean. We're closer to the ocean here than you all are there in Illinois. And when I go to the ocean, the rhythm of the waves on the shore is very comforting. And we've just had a grandchild born, our first grandchild, and I'm thinking about how the child was close to her mother's heartbeat all that long time. And it just seems like something, human beings just respond to that sort of rhythm.
And what about rhyme?
Well, I don't use a lot of end rhyme anymore, although I do sometimes. I use repetition of the same words, which is something that you get in a form called a sestina, where the form of the sestina just repeats the same words over and over. In fact, it's a six-line stanza with six stanzas, and each stanza has to repeat the same six words in the end position. So the word gets repeated six times. I don't write sestinas a lot anymore, but I do write a lot of repetition of the same word into poems. And I also use words that rhyme internally. So picking up sounds from one another. So the poems, I hope, are sound pieces, even though they don't rhyme at the ends. The lines don't rhyme at the ends.
Me clutching my car keys. The rhythm, the repetition, the sounds, from the poem you just read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't really analyzed this for a long time. I mean, I do that kind of work when I'm in the middle of writing it.
Sure.
But, yeah. And the list of apples, I think, you know, has some of that So what I am trying to do at the moment, and it really writing poetry, like I think like writing anything, is a journey where you learn as you go. But what I'm working on at the moment is a voice which is very understandable and which is hopefully appealing, which also uses some of these formal aspects.
Let's talk a little bit about, before we reach the conclusion of our program here today, let's talk a little bit about bad poetry. There's just so much. How do you respond to so much poetry that's obvious and hackneyed and written with some, it sounds like it's written by someone with no ear who doesn't read? What can you say about bad poetry that's written in English these days?
Well, you know, I used to know of, still do know, but I don't have a copy of it, and I've kind of lost track of it, an anthology of bad poetry called The Stuffed Owl, which has bad poetry of all different kinds in it.
Hmm.
I don't know what to say about bad poetry. There is bad poetry around, of course. I think a lot of it is the product of people who are trying to explain themselves to themselves, and writing helps them. It doesn't really do a whole lot for the reader. And so I guess the bad poetry that's published is more of a problem than the bad poetry that's written and isn't published, is kind of put away in a drawer. But there's a lot of good poetry out there. You know, all kinds of small journals.
I know as an English professor you want to tell us about that, but let me say one more thing about a subcategory of bad poetry, which is bad religious poetry.
Oh, yes, bad religious poetry.
What makes it awful?
Well, I think that it's the language program, and the language problem in part that I was talking about before. I think that much of it is not, it's not fresh. It's not surprising. It's not spoken by a voice that you can believe in. It's kind of spoken by a poet in the sky who doesn't have any individual voice. I think one of the great pleasures of reading poetry is that it's one of the last things that's not franchisable. You know, you can't have some McDonald's of the poet world. And a lot of these poets, or a lot of the poems that are bad poetry, are bad because you couldn't tell one author from the other. They're like franchised things, franchised stores or franchised restaurants. So I think that surprising and new and individual are all ways of combating that bad poetry.
And now let me get to where you were leading, which are, where can people read good poetry? Where are some of the places they should look?
Well, there are lots of places, and I unfortunately will exclude some of the places that are wonderful just by making a list of places. I would start with Poetry Magazine, which is right in Chicago. And
which will now continue for sure, since it received a $100 million grant from a poet that they never published.
It's absolutely amazing that happened. Yeah, from Ruth Lilly, who turns out to be the greatest supporter of poetry in the history of the country. It is poetry, a lot of it, about the spiritual journey and other struggles that we're having.
And people who would like to subscribe to poetry, let me just quickly tell people how they can do that. They may write to 1030 North Clark Street, Suite 420, Chicago, 60610. That's for Poetry Magazine, and to subscribe, it's $35 a year in the United States. Go ahead, Jean. Sorry.
Well, you know, the version of poetry that's on the web is something that people might want to look at, too. The web address is www.poetrymagazine, all one word, .org. They have an archives, which is wonderful. I don't remember how far back it goes, but there are lots of poems in that archives. And if you take a look at some of those poems, you will get a sense of what's going on in Poetry Magazine. Another great place to look at poetry is Verse Daily, which is also a web address. That's www.versedaily, all one word, .org. Other magazines or periodicals that are really wonderful are Shenandoah, which is a small magazine that also includes fiction and essays, and it publishes very interesting things. Prairie Schooner, which comes from Lincoln, Nebraska, is a wonderful magazine, whose editor is Hilda Raz, and she's really an interesting editor, what she publishes. The Gettysburg Review is a wonderful magazine. There are many, and there are lots of them that have presences on the web, too, so you can find them that way, and they have links from one to the other.
And for those interested in spirituality, religion, ethics, values, some of the particular ones that publish religious poetry, we've already mentioned the Christian Century, Image, Notre Dame Review, and there are many other places. National Catholic Reporter publishes poetry once a month.
And I would say Mars Hill, the Mars Hill Review is a wonderful review. Cresset, there's a wonderful magazine named Cresset, which does great poetry.
That's C-R-E-S-S-E-T.
That's Cresset. It, mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, we've been talking today with Jean Murray Walker, and I want to thank the author for being willing to talk on the radio and read some of her poetry for us. It's been a real treat. She's the author of her most recent book. Her sixth book of poetry is A Deed to the Light, published by University of Illinois Press as part of their Illinois Poetry series, edited by Lawrence Lieberman. It's available from the press and bookstores as well. I want to thank also our listeners and callers, of course, with questions and comments. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program, Keeping the Faith. Coming up in the weeks ahead, we have several interesting guests. Next week, we're playing an archive program featuring Miley Palmer commenting on the most recently very popular book, The Da Vinci Code. That's July 18. On July 25, our guest will be David Eisenman, talking about a Christian view of U.S. prison policy. Later in August, Joel and Barry Schweitzer will be talking about Jewish education, and Father Paul Pluth will be talking about Mary in church life, and Cindy Shepherd will be talking about the preacher as minor poet. These are all live programs from 5 to 6 Central Time on WILL AM 580. We're eager to have listeners call in with comments or questions. Thanks again.
Thank you, Steve. It's been a great pleasure.
Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, a production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants. Support for today's broadcast comes from Community Blood Services of Illinois, the nonprofit agency providing all donated blood for patients in Champaign-Urbana, Charleston-Mattoon, Danville, and Effingham. Donation information at 367-2202 or on the web at bloodservices.org. Blood donation. It's about life.
The Storm Prediction Center has issued a severe thunderstorm watch for much of Illinois, effective this Sunday afternoon and evening until 11 p.m. Hail to 2 inches in diameter, thunderstorm wind gusts to 70 miles per hour, and dangerous lightning are possible in these areas. In the WILL severe weather coverage area, the severe thunderstorm watch includes all of our severe weather coverage counties, Champaign, Ford, Vermilion, Douglas, Edgar, Coles, DeWitt, Pyatt, and Moultrie. Remember, a severe thunderstorm watch means conditions are favorable for severe thunderstorms in and close to the watch area. Keep an eye on the sky for threatening weather conditions and stay tuned to this station for the latest weather information and possible warnings. Severe thunderstorms can and occasionally do produce tornadoes. Repeating, a severe thunderstorm watch is in effect for much of Illinois and all of the WILL severe weather coverage area until 11 o'clock tonight. This is WILL Urbana, listener-supported public radio. It's 6 p.m. Central Time. This American Life is next.